You're listening to Wikisleep Podcast, a podcast designed to help you relax and unwind through calm, quiet storytelling. I'm your host, Adrian Sala. One of the challenges with this podcast is encouraging people to subscribe as they're starting to relax. So if you can remember tomorrow or in the coming days to subscribe to the podcast and give us a review, that would be greatly appreciated. But for now, let's relax and unwind. Take a moment to breathe in deeply and slowly. And when you get to the top of your breath, pause just for a few seconds. And then breathe out again, slowly and deeply. If you find your mind wandering, or if you're feeling stressed or anxious, try doing these deep breaths a few times. It tends to help you relax and find focus. Today's story, Anne Boleyn. Anne Boleyn was Queen of England from 1533 to 1536 as the second wife of King Henry VIII. Their marriage and her execution positioned her as a key figure in the political and religious upheaval that launched the English Reformation. Anne was the daughter of Thomas Boleyn, later Earl of Wiltshire and Earl of Ormond, and his wife, Lady Elizabeth Howard, daughter of Thomas Howard, the second Duke of Norfolk. A lack of records from the period has made it impossible to establish exactly when Anne was born. However, it is widely accepted as being sometime between 1501 and 1507. At the time of her birth, the Boleyn family was considered one of the most respected in the English aristocracy. Her father was a well-respected diplomat with a gift for languages and also a favorite of Henry VII of England, who sent him on many diplomatic missions abroad. Anne's early education was typical for women of her class. Her academic education included arithmetic, her family genealogy, grammar, history, reading, spelling, and writing. But she also developed domestic skills such as dancing, embroidery, good manners, household management, music, needlework, and singing. She learned to play games such as cards, chess, and dice. And she was also taught archery, falconry, horseback riding, and hunting. After King Henry VII's death, Anne's father continued his diplomatic career under Henry VIII. In Europe, his charm won many admirers, including Margaret of Austria, daughter of Maximilian I, the Holy Roman Emperor. During this period, Margaret ruled the Netherlands on her nephew Charles's behalf and was so impressed with Boleyn that she offered his daughter Anne a place in her household. Anne made a good impression with her manners and studiousness. Margaret reported that she was well-spoken and pleasant for her young age. Anne stayed with Margaret from spring 1513 until her father arranged for her to attend Henry VIII's sister, Mary, who who was to wed Louis XII of France in October 1514. Anne was a maid of honor to Queen Mary in France, and then to Mary's 15-year-old stepdaughter, Queen Claude, with whom she stayed nearly 7 years. In the Queen's household, she completed her study of French and developed interests in art, fashion, illuminated manuscripts, literature, music, poetry, and religious philosophy. She also acquired knowledge of French culture, dance, etiquette, literature, music, and poetry, and gained experience in flirtation and the game of courtly love. Anne's French education proved itself in later years, inspiring many new trends among ladies and courtiers of England. Anne Boleyn is said to have been of average height and slender build, with long, straight, and thick black hair, dark eyes, a strong nose, and a wide mouth with slim lips and an olive complexion. She was considered to be brilliant, charming, driven, elegant, forthright, and graceful, with a keen wit and a lively, opinionated, and passionate personality. She was also known to have had a sharp tongue and a terrible temper, but exerted a powerful charm on those who met her. Anne's French education ended in 1521, when her father summoned her back to England. She was recalled to marry her cousin James Butler, a young man who was several years older than she. The marriage was intended to settle a dispute over the title and estates of the Earldom of Ormond. However, the marriage negotiations came to a halt, and James Butler married Lady Joan Fitzgerald, daughter and heiress of James Fitzgerald, 10th Earl of Desmond, and Amy O'Brien. Nonetheless, Anne made her debut at the Chateau Vert pageant in honor of the imperial ambassadors on the 4th of March, 1522. There, she took part in an elaborate dance with King Henry's younger sister, Mary, several other ladies of the court, and her own sister. All wore gowns of white satin, embroidered with gold thread. She quickly established herself as one of the most stylish and accomplished women at the court, and soon, a number of young men were competing for her attention. One of her courtiers was Henry Percy, son of the Earl of Northumberland, with whom she entered into a secret betrothal. But the romance was broken off when Percy's father refused to support their engagement. Anne was then sent from the court to her family's countryside estates for a time. Upon her return to court, she again entered the service of Catherine of Aragon, King Henry's wife. Anne was skillful at the game of courtly love, which was often played in the antechambers, and in 1526, King Henry VIII became enamored with her. Some say that Anne resisted the king's attempts to seduce her, refusing to become his mistress while he was married. But within a year, he proposed marriage to her, and she accepted. Both assumed an annulment to his current marriage to Catherine of Aragon could be obtained within a matter of months. Catherine had come to England to be bride to Henry's brother Arthur, who died unexpectedly soon after their marriage. Since Spain and England still wanted an alliance, a dispensation for their marriage was granted by Pope Julius II on the grounds that Catherine was still a virgin and she was instead married to Henry. The marriage of Catherine and Henry took place in 1509, but Henry eventually became dubious about its validity, claiming that Catherine's inability to provide an heir was a sign of God's displeasure. Meanwhile, his feelings for Anne and her refusals to become his mistress are thought to have contributed to his decision that no pope had a right to overrule the Bible. His conjecture meant that he believed he had been living in sin with Catherine of Aragon all these years, though Catherine hotly contested this and refused to concede that her marriage to his brother had ever been consummated. Henry's belief in the invalidity of his marriage to Catherine also meant that his daughter, Mary, was a bastard, and that Pope Clement would have to admit the previous pope's assertion was wrong and annul the marriage. Henry's quest for an annulment became euphemistically known as the King's Great Matter. Anne determined that she would not yield to the king's embraces until she was legitimately acknowledged as queen. Although she began to take her place at his side in policy and in state, she did not yet sleep in his bed. Henry soon became absorbed in securing an annulment from Catherine. In 1527, William Knight, the king's secretary, was sent to Pope Clement to sue for the annulment on the grounds that the dispensation of the previous pope had been obtained under false pretenses and his marriage to Catherine was not valid. Henry also petitioned, in the event of his becoming free, a dispensation to contract a new marriage with any woman, even in the first degree of affinity, whether the affinity was contracted by lawful or unlawful connection. It was a clear reference to Anne Boleyn. Unluckily for Henry, the Pope was at that time prisoner of Charles V, the Holy Roman Emperor, as a result of the sack of Rome in May 1527. As such, the king's emissary had some difficulty obtaining direct access to him. In the end, he had to return with a conditional dispensation, which the Lord High Chancellor of England, Thomas Wolsey, insisted was technically insufficient. Henry now had no choice but to put his great matter into Wolsey's hands, who did all he could to secure a decision in Henry's favor, even going so far as to convene an ecclesiastical court in England. But the Pope, still a hostage to Charles V, was loyal to his Aunt Catherine, with whom Henry wished to separate. The Pope forbade Henry to contract a new marriage until a decision was reached in Rome, not in England. Convinced that Wolsey's loyalties lay with the Pope, not England, Anne, as well as Wolsey's many enemies, ensured his dismissal from public office in 1529. Had it not been for his death from illness in 1530, Wolsey may have been executed for treason. A year later, in 1531, Queen Catherine was banished from court and her rooms were given to Anne. However, public support remained with Queen Catherine. One evening in the autumn of 1531, Anne was dining at a manor house on the River Thames and was almost seized by a crowd of angry women. She just managed to escape by boat. On May 23rd, 1533, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Thomas Cranmer, sat in judgment at a special court convened to rule on the validity of the king's marriage to Catherine of Aragon. He declared the marriage of Henry and Catherine null and void. Five days later, on the 28th of May, 1533, Cranmer declared the marriage of Henry and Anne to be good and valid. Catherine was formally stripped of her title as queen, and Anne was consequently crowned as queen consort on June 1st, 1533, in a magnificent ceremony at Westminster Abbey. Unlike any other queen consort, Anne was crowned with St. Edward's crown, which had previously been used to crown only a monarch. After her coronation, Anne settled into a quiet routine at the king's favorite residence, Greenwich Palace, to prepare for the birth of her baby. The child was born slightly premature on the 7th of September, 1533, a girl who was christened Elizabeth. The birth of a girl was a heavy blow to her parents, since they had confidently expected a boy. Meanwhile, the House of Commons had forbidden all appeals to Rome and exacted penalties against all who introduced papal bulls into England. It was only then that Pope Clement at last took the step of announcing a provisional sentence of excommunication against the king and the archbishop. He condemned the marriage to Anne, and in March 1534 declared the marriage to Catherine legal and again ordered Henry to return to her. But Henry dissented. He now required his subjects to swear an oath attached to the First Succession Act, which effectively rejected papal authority in legal matters and recognized Anne Boleyn as queen. The act also made Elizabeth, daughter of Henry VIII by Anne Boleyn, the heir presumptive to the crown. Those who refused, such as Thomas More, who had resigned as Lord Chancellor, were then placed in the Tower of London. Anne Boleyn's sharp intelligence and political acumen and forward manners, although desirable in a mistress, were, at the time, unacceptable in a wife. After a stillbirth or miscarriage as early as Christmas 1534, Henry was said to have been discussing the possibility of divorcing her without having to return to Catherine. Nothing came of the issue as the couple reconciled and spent summer 1535 together, and by October, she was pregnant again. But Anne was blamed for the tyranny of her husband's government, and was referred to by some of her subjects as the king's whore. On the 8th of January, 1536, news of Catherine of Aragon's death reached the king and Anne, who were overjoyed. The following day, they both wore yellow, the symbol of joy and celebration in England, from head to toe, and celebrated her death with festivities. In Spain, the home country of Catherine of Aragon, yellow was the color of mourning, in addition to black. For this reason, the wearing of yellow by Henry and Anne may have been a symbol of mourning. With Mary's mother dead, Anne attempted to make peace with her, but Mary rebuffed Anne's overtures, perhaps because of rumors circulating that Catherine had been poisoned by Anne or Henry. These rumors began after the discovery during her embalming that Catherine's heart was blackened. Modern medical experts are in agreement that this was not the result of poisoning, but of cancer of the heart, an extremely rare condition which was not understood at the time. Anne, pregnant again, was aware of the dangers if she failed to give birth to a son. At this time, Henry began paying court to Jane Seymour. In Anne's presence, he gave her a locket with a miniature portrait of himself inside. It is said that Anne responded by ripping off the locket with such force her fingers bled. As Anne recovered from her miscarriage, Henry, desperate for a son, declared that he had been seduced into the marriage by means of deception. His new mistress, Jane Seymour, was quickly moved into royal quarters. Many historians believe that Anne's fall was primarily engineered by her former ally, Thomas Cromwell. Anne argued with Cromwell over the redistribution of church revenues and over foreign policy. She advocated that revenues be distributed to charitable and educational institutions, and she favored a French alliance. Cromwell insisted on filling the king's depleted coffers while taking a cut for himself and preferred an imperial alliance. For these reasons, it is suggested that Anne Boleyn had become a major threat to Thomas Cromwell, and he therefore invented accusations of adultery. However, belief in this idea is divided. Such a bold attempt by Cromwell, given the limited evidence, could have risked his office and even his life, and he was not known to be a stupid man. Instead, many argue that Henry himself issued the crucial instructions about the adulteress Anne Boleyn, and his officials, including Cromwell, carried them out. The result, by modern standards, was a legal travesty. However, the rules of the time were not bent in order to assure a conviction. There was no need to tamper with rules that guaranteed the desired result, since law at the time was an engine of state, not a mechanism for justice. Toward the end of April, a Flemish musician in Anne's service named Mark Smeaton was arrested. He initially denied being the Queen's lover, but later confessed, perhaps tortured or promised, his freedom. Another courtier, Sir Henry Norris, was arrested on May Day, but being an aristocrat, could not be tortured. Norris denied his guilt and swore that Queen Anne was innocent. On May 2nd, 1536, Anne was arrested and taken to the Tower of London by barge. In the tower, she collapsed, demanding to know the location of her father and brother, who were also arrested, as well as the charges against her. Anne Boleyn was tried in the Tower of London before a jury of 27 peers. She was accused of adultery, incest, and high treason. By the Treason Act, adultery on the part of a queen was a form of treason, for which the penalty was hanging, drawing, and quartering for a man, and burning alive for a woman. But the accusations, especially that of incestuous adultery, were also designed to impugn her moral character. Anne's one-time betrothed, Henry Percy, sat on the jury that unanimously found her guilty. When the verdict was announced, he collapsed and had to be carried from the courtroom. He died 8 months later and was succeeded by his nephew. On May 14th, 1536, Anne's marriage to Henry was declared null and void, and she was sentenced to death. William Kingston, the constable of the Tower, reported Anne seemed very happy and ready to be done with life. Henry commuted her sentence from burning to beheading, and rather than have a queen beheaded with a common axe, he brought in an expert swordsman from France to perform the execution. Shortly before dawn, Anne called Kingston to hear the mass with her and swore in his presence on the eternal salvation of her soul, upon the holy sacraments, that she had never been unfaithful to the king. On the morning of Friday, May 19th, Anne was brought within the Tower precincts to a scaffold erected on the north side of the White Tower, in front of what is now the Waterloo Barracks. She wore a red petticoat under a loose, dark gray gown of damask trimmed in fur and a mantle of ermine. Accompanied by two female attendants, Anne made her final walk from the Queen's house. She climbed the scaffold and made a short speech to the crowd, saying, "Good Christian people, I am come hither to die, for according to the law and by the law I am judged to die, and therefore I will speak nothing against it. I am come hither to accuse no man, nor to speak anything of that, whereof I am accused and condemned to die. But I pray God save the king and send him long to reign over you. For a gentler nor more merciful prince was there never. And to me he was ever a good and gentle sovereign lord. And if any person will meddle of my cause, I require them to judge the best. And thus I take my leave of the world of you all. And I heartily desire you all to pray for me. O Lord, have mercy on me. To God I commend my soul." Anne Boleyn, no more than 35 years old, lifted off her headdress and tucked her hair under a coif. After a brief farewell to her weeping ladies, she knelt, and one of her ladies tied a blindfold over her eyes. She knelt upright in the French style of executions. Her final words were a prayer that she repeated continually, saying, "Jesus, receive my soul. O Lord God, have pity on my soul." With a single stroke of a French sword, the former Queen of England, Anne Boleyn, was executed.